Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I would say Happy New Year because this is my first show of the year. I want to thank all the listeners. I'm in Philadelphia and let me tell you, I am stuck in Philadelphia. It is snow all over the place, white, beautiful, serene. It's extremely quiet, but snow nonetheless, almost 20-some inches of snow. Today we have a wonderful guest, M.K. Asante Jr. He's an author, filmmaker, and professor. And he recently did a film featuring Maya Angelou as the narrator, The Black Candle, talking about Kwanzaa, the history of Kwanzaa and the meaning of Kwanzaa, and how it has been a very instrumental in uplifting and uniting African-American people in the United States, but also African people around the globe. He's also the author of It's Bigger Than Hip Hop. If you need a history lesson, because February is Black History Month, just pick up It's Bigger Than Hip Hop and you will have been empowered with so much knowledge your mind probably can't even handle in this book. He drops knowledge about self-image of Black people, the poverty, the music that Black people have and can use as a tool against these different issues of healthcare and education. And he's also very artistic. He has a softer side, I'm not sure. He has two books of poetry, like Water Running Off My Back is one of his first books, and Beautiful and Ugly, too, is another book by him. Good morning, MK.
Good morning, Joy. How you doing? Good morning to all the listeners.
I want to read one of your poems. It's called Clipped Wing Birds. I'm going to read that now. Clipped wing birds don't fly. They dance to keep from falling, laugh to keep from crying, pray to keep from calling, work to keep from trying. They injure themselves by not flying. Tell me about that. Where did you dig up that theory?
You know, that's from Beautiful and Ugly, too. You know, that came out in 2005, that book. So that poem was written a little while ago. And it really came out of my experiences. You know, the bird there obviously is a metaphor. And it really came out of just my experiences growing up in Philadelphia and seeing a lot of clipped wing birds, you know, and sometimes seeing kind of self-imposed clipping of the wings.
You talk about your brother in It's Bigger Than Hip Hop and his issues around self-image and feeling like he was in a box.
My brother, but not just my brother as well. I talk about my own experiences, feeling, you know, in being, you know, a prisoner in that box. And I think a lot of people are dealing with similar issues. And, you know, when it comes to the notion of not being able to fly, I mean, I saw a whole generation of my peers, people I went to school with, people I grew up with, who now many of them are not even here with us, you know, have passed on in their late teenage years or early 20s, incarcerated, and just not flying, you know, at all. So it came out of that experience and trying to reflect on it and try to understand, you know, both the societal elements that contribute to that, but also sometimes our own personal, you know, motivation and responsibility. So it came out of kind of a dialogue I was having about that with myself.
Yeah. Now, you worked just recently on The Black Candle, and that is a beautiful film. I watched it, and I just I've celebrated Kwanzaa myself. And I think that it's important that you did the film because it really breaks down what is Kwanzaa. Kwanzaa is not a religious holiday. If anybody's listening, it is not a religious holiday. Kwanzaa was founded in 1966 by Maulana Karenga, and it's celebrated from December 26th through January 1st. If you're in the chat room, I see some people in the chat room, I broke down some of the different principles that Kwanzaa is centered around. There's seven principles. So, MK, one of the first principles of Kwanzaa is umoja, which is unity. Where did you first see unity, and how did it affect you in your life?
Yeah, I guess I first saw unity probably in my family. you know, in terms of secret of my life. You know, but I was actually born in Zimbabwe in 1981, right after the liberation struggle. So in some senses, I was born into a kind of unified situation because Zimbabwe had just gained its independence earlier that year from the British, and there was a united struggle for independence. So I was kind of born in the midst of that. But I think I would first see unity in my family, you know, and those familial experiences, and, you know, and then it kind of expands outward. I think from family, then you start to see it in your community. And I could definitely see unity in my community growing up. And so, you know, so I think it started with family and then extended to community. And now that community, you know, that I'm a part of is global now, you know. So
yes.
I see it all over the world.
I think that's important, too. In your movie, you talked about Kwanzaa being celebrated outside of the United States in Paris. You examined the celebration there of Kwanzaa. And I think that Kwanzaa, one of the main things it talks about is how it can unify us as a people. And one of the second principles is Kuju Jakulia, self-determination. You had some wonderful parents. I mean, I didn't grow up with you, but from paper on black and white, they look pretty cool. And for those of the listeners who don't know, his father, Malefe Asante, started the first African American Studies PhD program here in Philadelphia at Temple University. His mother is a wonderful dancer, scholar, Kariamu Welsh Asante. So did your parents have something to do with your self-determination, your drive? I mean, you're extremely young, and you have all these titles behind you, author, filmmaker, professor, poet, you know, I guess even community organizer, if you want to say. Are you going to run for president? I mean...
No, okay. I'm not. And I don't, you know, there are some real community organizers out there who are really doing that. So I won't want to take credit for doing that because I know how hard they work. But, you know, for me, I've been influenced by both my parents as far as self-determination. I mean, one thing that always is deep for me is, you know, both my parents were born, you know, into destitute poverty. All of my grandparents had no more than a fourth grade education, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, my dad coming from Valdosta, Georgia, one of 16 children in a shack, you know, the size of, you know, a studio apartment, 16 children, and, you know, coming from that situation and going on and writing 70 books and, you know, founding the PhD program in African American Studies, and my mom, you know, coming out of a destitute situation in Brooklyn and Bed-Stuy and managing to, you know, do the same thing and become distinguished in her field. It's really an incredible thing, you know. And so I'm always inspired by them, and I'd like to think that some of that drive has been passed on.
Passed on. How can African American people today? I mean, in your book, It's Bigger Than Hip Hop. You talk about, you know, how it's so corporate and it's being used to kind of hypnotize us and put this false image. You mentioned a whole chapter about the real versus the real. And for the people who are listening, he's talking about R-E-E-L, like a movie reel, versus real, R-E-A, reality. So how can we get control of that again? How can we get control of defining ourselves and naming ourselves and creating and speaking for ourselves? What do you think is the solution for that?
Well, you know, in terms of the image thing, I think it works on different levels. I think on the one level, people who are in the field of creating these images and creating this media must be bold enough and must be courageous enough to create new images and to create images that challenge the single story notion. And when I say the single story notion, I'm talking about, you know, there's a danger anytime a group of people are reduced to a single story. And a lot of times what you find is kind of a singular story, a mono story when it comes to the black experience. And people have to be bold enough to challenge that. But on the other hand, you know, education is fundamental and vital and key, because even if those films are made, if our people and our audience and our community is not educated and not ready to engage, then they won't support those kind of images and those that kind of work.
Right, right, because they're stuck, because they're stuck in looking at something they're comfortable with, and you kind of have to get out your comfort zone and start some type of revolution.
Exactly. You know, it's like when John Singleton did the movie Rosewood, you know, and, you know, they spent a lot of money on that film, you know, $25 million, and it was a period piece, and people were kind of risky about it anyway to start. The studio didn't want to do it, but they ended up doing it, and then, you know, the weekend that it came out, Booty Call beat it in the box office. I mean, it didn't just beat it, but it you know, kicked its
blasted
butt
out the water, right? Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And you know, that sends a message. You know, that sends a message, and that's not just about the creators, but it's about the people who are supporting it. And you know, if we're putting our money behind one thing, and you know, when it comes to Rosewood, we never get around to get into the theater, then you know, then we can't expect for Rosewood's to be continued to be made, you know?
Right. Well, that's one of the principles of Kwanzaa. We talk about Ujamaa. I skipped over one, but Ujamaa is cooperative economics. And it's important, I think, for me personally, and also I believe you believe the same thing, is putting money back into the community and putting money back into images that support the variety of African-American experiences and showing them to the world, but also educating ourselves, you know?
Definitely, definitely, you know, and that doesn't mean, when we talk about new images, it doesn't mean that the images can't be complex and the images can't, you know, they're very real things that happen, you know, in the community. Some of those things are negative. Some of those things are positive. You know, so it doesn't have to be, you know, kind of one-sided, but what it does need to do is allow the space, allow the room, the breath for multiple stories and multiple, you know, narratives.
Experience,
in terms of who we are, yeah.
Well, you talked about education being the key. I want to read one of your poems, Two Sets of Notes for Black Students, and that's from Like Water Running Off My Back. That's one of MK's books. Check it out. You can also check his website out, www.mkasante.com. And for those of you interested in, you can purchase the movie The Black Candle featuring Maya Angelou and a variety of other wonderful scholars and artists. Just go to theblackcandle.com. Let me read this poem here. This is Two Sets of Notes for Black Students. Extremely powerful. I find myself feeling as if I am touching the ground and the ceiling in institutions that do not engage in healing. They simply open the wounds and entrap me in rooms where I am consumed by hypocrisy. But even Greek philosophers weren't the authors of their own philosophy. And the statues on campus be watching me, Washington, Jefferson, Williams, clocking me, as if to say, my time's up. But I don't run laps on tracks. I run laps around the scholars of tomorrow, because their new schools of thought are merely our histories borrowed. And they labeled me militant and black national radical, trying to put my learning process on sabbatical. I don't apologize. I spit truth into the whites of eyes infected by white lies. They even try to get me to see their point of view from a brother that looks like me. That brother doesn't talk like me, walk like me, or act like me. And that brother turned his head when I asked if he was black like me, mastering their thoughts and forgetting your own. And you wonder why you always feel alone, from the Medea to the academia, hanging brothers like coats and in their schools. I always take two sets of notes, one set to ace the test, and one set I call the truth. And when I find historical contradictions, I use the first set as proof, proof that black youth's minds are being polluted, convoluted, diluted, not culturally rooted. The poem goes on, and you definitely got to pick up Like Water Running Off My Back, one of his first books of poetry, M.K. Asante Jr. I agree with you. I have a daughter, and she's in school. She's in one of the better schools in the Philadelphia area, Girls High. But yet and still, throughout her life, I try to educate her and show her images of the variety of types of African-Americans that are out there. I mean, there's light-skinned people, there's dark-skinned people, there's tall, there's short, there's people who are Christians, there's people who are Muslims. I was raised as a Buddhist. I'm a black person, and I was raised as a Buddhist. And when I say that, you know, up until the age of 19, I practiced Buddhism. And people are like, huh? They can't even grasp or conceive. And You know, but I can't grasp and conceive the issue of Christianity because that's not what I was raised with. I mean, I had some experiences with it, but both my parents were Buddhist. So there's a variety of African Americans out there, and I think we need to embrace and unify, but also educate. Education is the key. You're a professor. Talk about that.
Yeah, and part of the undercurrent for that piece, and just for a lot of my work in general, is about challenging the status quo. You know, challenging things. You know, I really believe in the necessity of challenging everything. You know, and that probably comes also out of my experience, some of the educational experiences I've had. But really challenging everything. Nothing is above or beyond challenging, because it's through challenging, it's through asking questions that we gain knowledge, that we gain understanding, that we gain wisdom, that we're able to overstand in a sense. So what I'm saying is, when they teach you, you know, Christopher Columbus discovered, you know, America, you know, you challenge that. You know, you challenge that notion. And if he discovered America, and then you come in the next day, you jump on your teacher's back and you tell your teacher you discovered her. You know, and then you see how that works.
Well, how can we talk to the young people? I mean, you know, for young people in your film, you even talk to young people about, did they know what Kwanzaa was? And in your book, going back to the issue of hip-hop, you know, hip-hop, I mean, when I see my daughter's friends, they're listening to hip-hop. That's what they're listening to. They're listening, but the images, unfortunately, which you talk about in your book also, some of them are negative. You know, the exploitation of women, you know, this whole hyper-masculinity issue. In your book, you talk bell hooks, you bring up bell hooks and her talking about black men and the issue of, you know, what it is for a black man to be really black. How can we talk to our young people and break it down for them so that they digest it and actually and listen? I mean, what are some of your things that you've done with young people?
Well, I think, number one, it's important to listen to young people. You know, I was a young person at one point, you know, younger than I am now.
yes, younger than you are now.
And I was kicked out of school, suspended a lot, you know, went through my issues of rebellion. And, you know, I had people, adults who, you know, were in my life at the time who gave up on me or weren't listening to me. And so I think it's important to listen to young people a lot of times, you know. And then it's also important, you know, to make sure and to connect with them on some level. And if that's hip-hop, that's hip-hop. If it's something else, it's something else. But connect with them on some level. And I think as it relates to hip-hop, you know, ask them. You know, what I find, and one of the reasons why I wrote that book is I found that a lot of young people, you know, thought that they were engaged in hip-hop or thought that they were hip-hop and really don't even know what hip-hop is and don't really know what it's about, don't know where it started, how it started, and what it means and what the elements are and what the principles are and what the tenets are. And I think, you know, I think young people need to know that. And what I found is that as far as that information goes, they're eager to learn it. And once they learn it, it kind of changes their whole perception on what they're doing now, because basically, you know, the music, what they're listening to, a lot of the young people in the city, the radio and stuff like that, that's the equivalent of, like, you know, McDonald's, right? And hip-hop.
Fast food, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, but hip-hop is the equivalent of real food. So what I mean is that a lot of times we look at McDonald's, right? We go to McDonald's, we see that, we taste the artificialness, and then we say the state of food is horrible or the state of food is messed up. When
right,
in reality,
right. We're eating it, yeah.
It's really the state of McDonald's and fast food. But there is real food out there, just like there's real hip-hop out there. But you have to search for it. It's not on every corner on Broad Street. You know, you have to kind of go down the side street to find the good food and the home cooked stuff and the real deal. So, you know, that's really how I see that.
Yeah. Let me read one of your other poems. This is getting into something that I'm very familiar with. For those of you who may or may not know about the Venus Hottentot, Sarjay Bartum, I'm going to read some of the poem and then we'll talk about who she was and things of that nature. This is called Ghetto Booty, the Hot and Top Remix, MK Asante Jr. The spectacle wasn't you. Look at them. Men without women lining the streets of cities to attend. Same ones at the fray of gory, standing in shadows of the no-return doorways. That was then. When you endured their scientific staccato, trapped in the plaster of a flesh-toned coffin customized for cattle, that was then. When they sold ounces of your womanhood, leaving you a weightless museum piece simply because they could, that was then. Look at them. That was then. Look at them. That was then. And beautifully, I'm sorry, and I'm ashamed only because if that was then, where was I and the rest of our men? Must have been studying them for how to treat daughters scattered to Atlantic winds. We've become masters, spreading heteropsychotic donkey rhymes to those who were mastered. And the masses think that the base gloss vulture, stalking the beauty of inverted brown wombs for sales jumps on posters, is our culture. So do we. The spectacle is not them. Look at us. You want to break that down, MK?
that's a little
history lesson right there, you know.
One of my favorite poets, Lawrence Ferlinghetti, he said, never talk about a poem after you read a poem because the poem is the statement, you know. And once you talk about it, you're never as eloquent about it as you were in the poem.
All right. Well, listeners, you need to check out what that poem was about.
But I will say that one of the things that's been important for me a lot of times is, you know, and this is someone who understands the history of oppression, you know, especially as it pertains to people of African descent. But one of the things that I'm constantly looking at are, what is it that we can control, you know? When you're dealing with certain elements, you know what that element is about. So when colonialists from England come to South Africa with guns and weapons, and they're, you know, pillaging and raping and enslaving, you know, we know what that's about. You know, that's that negative energy, that's that destructive energy, you know.
But have we not made any strides as an African people? Have we not come any further?
Well,
I mean, you know,
yeah,
people will say that was then, you know.
this is what I'm saying. I'm saying that, you know, when you're dealing with that, you know what that is, right? And so the question is, what are you, right? Because you can recognize that energy, but what I'm seeing when I look at Sergeant Bartman is, where were we? What were we doing? You know, we already know what that force is going to do, but what are we going to do?
And so
it's the same, you know, thing today, and kind of putting Sarji in the contemporary context, you know, looking at some of these issues and just saying, well, you know, when are we men? It's really a call to action. You know, when are we going to do something?
Well, that goes to the Kwanzaa principle of Ujima, collective work and responsibility. That's one of the other principles, to build and maintain our community together and make our brothers and sisters' problems our problems and to solve them together. That's Ujima, collective work and responsibility. I think that's that's what you're really talking about. Let's talk about one of the other principles, Imani, faith, to believe with all our heart in our people, our parents, our teachers, our leaders, and the righteousness and victory of our struggle. Where do you get your faith from that things will get better, that we will start some kind of revolution to take things in control, not just as a collective, but also, you know, it starts, I think, in the mind, taking control of your mind and the image you have of yourself. Where do you get your faith from?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, as far as a revolution is a protracted event, so it's something that happens over a long period of time, and I think in a lot of ways that started in 1526, you know, when African people were first brought here, and then later in 1619. But, you know, I think that has and it's been going on. It's been ongoing, right? And every decade, every century, there's kind of been new defining moments of that struggle. But I think for me, I get a lot of my faith actually from looking at the past struggles and the ancestors whose shoulders I stand upon. You know, and I get that from across the spectrum. So not just African American folks are inspiring me and giving me that sense of faith, but people from all walks of life throughout history, throughout the world. I mean, recently Howard Zinn just died. This is someone who's very important to my thought process and to the world. So I think you have to, you know, be rooted in who you are and be proud of that, but also be totally willing to engage the world for what it has to offer, because it has a lot to offer. So for me, I get my faith from ideas, you know, in various cultures and faiths around the world, and that inspires me and it keeps me going. And I also get my faith just from the resilience, just seeing the resilience of people on an everyday level, just seeing, you know, the strength that people exude. So it gives me faith and hope.
What's for the future? We have a couple minutes left, and I do see people in the chat room that are listening, and I'm sure people are listening on their computers and people are on the switchboard. What's next for MK Asante Jr.?
You know, a lot is next. there's so much. I've got, you know, a new film coming out this month, actually. I got a premiere in L.A. in a couple weeks called Motherland at the Pan-African Film Festival. I've got two other films, you know, in production, and we have three books that are in the works, in production, I guess you can call it. So lots of new projects, things that I'm doing, you know, on other, I'm doing some other fun, interesting things, doing something for blackatlas.com where I'll be traveling the world, looking at different, you know, topics as it relates to people of African descent. So I'll be going to, you know, Peru and going to, where else am I going? I'm going.
You're going all over the place.
I can't remember, but yeah, I'm going all around.
Well, you know what? Let me tell the audience, we have 2 minutes left. Check out mkasante.com. Again, that's mkasante.com to find out about his books, his film, his essays, his newspaper articles, his upcoming tours. He's going to be, I believe, in Lafayette College. Are you still going there?
Yeah. The tour, that's always being updated every week.
Right. So go to mkasante.com. Also, if you want to buy The Black Candle, go to theblackcandle.com to purchase the film. You also can set up screenings. There's a lot of tools and things on theblackcandle.com to help you use the film to educate people. I want to thank you so much on this snowy, crazy Philadelphia day for being on the show. I want to thank the listeners for listening today. I'm going to be doing another show at 11:30 with the Children's Scholarship Fund of Philadelphia. And you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/joykeys. Also, you can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. MK, thank you so much. All the best.
And
all your
future
projects, and hopefully you can come back on, maybe talk about your new film or your new book, whatever.
Definitely.
Just give me a call.
Thank you so much, Joy. Take
all
care.
Right. Peace. Thank you so much. Bye bye. All the listeners, again, at 11:30, I'm going to be talking with the Children's Scholarship Fund at 11:30, where they give out scholarships to low-income families in the Philadelphia area to help children K through 12 in their education. Definitely tune in a couple minutes to that program. Next week, we're going to be talking about teen dating violence with the DoSomething.org group and two great professors who wrote a book about programs that help alleviate teen dating violence. February, not only is Black History Month, but unfortunately, it's also Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month. It's a sad issue, but I think it's something that we need to talk about, and again, touching the youth and educating them about healthy relationships. So tune in next Saturday for that one. Thank you, everyone, for listening today, and have a beautiful snowy day if you're in the East Coast, and if you're in the West Coast and there's sun, have a wonderful, wonderful day out there also. Bye-bye.